I've been mulling over exactly how I want to record this since I posted the first part. The last part I know was heavy. It's going to get heavier. If you're not in the headspace to hear about the things I mentioned in the description, please turn this fucking thing off. No hard feelings, truly. I just need somewhere to put this, really. Out of my head. Somewhere tangible that I can see where it does exist, but not still in my head, if that makes any fucking sense at all. I've been fucking writing all of this down, and it's 14 pages at this point, which I realize is quite a bit, but to be fair, it is a small notebook. I'm going to stop fucking defending myself and just get to the fucking point. I think I just needed to get this through my system and tie up a loose end that I'm hesitating on whether I want to tie it up at all, and it would be easier just to delete the first fucking part entirely and pretend it doesn't exist, but not gonna do that. And so, without further ado, strange how some predilections result from an early association. Difficult or surprising experiences can damn well leave an indelible impression on the psyche. Sometimes you can entangle the massive proverbial cables connecting synapses, but they're tangled and knotted together like some macabre rat king. The survivors drag the dead along, a constant reminder of every misstep they've taken. There's no point in placing blame. It won't free you in the slightest. It just pisses you off more, really. Fortunately for rats, they can pull their tails and deglove them with enough force. It won't grow back, and it leaves the rat prone to infection, but they can survive. People can survive losing a limb, if not limbs, though nothing will ever be the same again. At least these wounds are visible. It's not really the same with chronic pain. I don't know if this is psychosomatic or not, but some of my scars itch all of a sudden. Or it's just referred pain from my back, shoulders, neck, just aggravated nerves making me feel itchy. The scar that itches the most is almost 2 years old and my most recent self-harm scar. To cope with the ADD and rejection-sensitive dysphoria, as well as the overwhelming and impulsive anger that often accompanies ADHD, I began to use physical pain as a kind of a hard reset of sorts. On one hand, it can be an impulsive thing, a way to divert that urgent, angry impulse into something. Friends who've seen me when I'm legit pissed say it's like I'm hulking out. Well, she hulking out, but still. Either way, they're not wrong. I don't get angry with others often, least of all enough to flip that switch. No. I'm infinitely more angry with myself than I am with anyone else. On the other hand, self-harm can be a form of maladaptive self-discipline. A punishment for whatever my neuroses can interpret me as having done wrong. With RSD, the response I have to this perception is as disproportionate as the perception itself may be, if not more so. I have a hell of a lot of intrusive thoughts, and it wouldn't surprise me if, at some point in the future, I'm diagnosed with OCD as well. Albeit a quieter, more internal manifestation. The smallest shit can trigger it. Overlooking some minor detail feels like abject failure. Then, when the triggers are huge, it's like adding insult to injury. I'm gentle with others on instinct. Bratty and snarky and strong-willed though I am, I'm gentle with others on instinct. Bratty, snarky, and strong-willed though I am, rarely is this in any way to wound or to hurt anyone. In terms of being gentle with myself, I struggle immensely. I can clean and dress the wounds of small children, not just scrape knees, mind you, with utmost care and delicacy. People I know with a low pain tolerance have asked me to help tend to post-surgical wounds. I've got a gentle touch with the right motivation. Showing myself the same courtesy I freely show others is where I falter. I'm working on that. It's just slow to progress. When a minor mistake triggers a raging internal tsunami of self-disgust, when I, say, missed a speck of food on a knife while I'm doing the dishes, this triggers a dizzying downward spiral, predominated by intrusive thoughts screaming at me to slit my throat with the proof of my apparent failure. I can't count how often this runs through my head on a daily basis. Genuinely, I don't fucking know how many times. It's just a part of my day at this point. My brain will tell me horrible things about myself to do horrible things to myself over the slightest and most minor of things. Tiny mistakes. Say nothing of massive failures I've made. Sometimes the intrusive thoughts come in individual lines, sometimes groups of three, and when they're really, really fucking bad, they repeat seemingly endlessly. I've become skilled in restraining the impulse to act. Rarely do I relent that restraint. I think being in chronic physical pain has helped me learn to cope with pain more effectively overall. I can't convince my body or brain not to respond to pain. That's not in me. I can't ignore it either. It'll insert itself at the forefront of my attention. Pain demands to be felt, to be recognized and validated. When there is treatment, you treat it. Physical wounds heal. They'll scar, of course, but they'll heal. Lasting damage, though, is your responsibility to manage, or your choice to perpetuate. Cutting open old scars weakens this tissue further. The most recent self-harm scar on my body was very deep when a wound. At the split second after slitting the skin open, I realized I went too deep. It takes a bit of forceful follow-through to break beneath every layer of your own skin. bubbly yellow fatty tissue is damn effective insulation. Seeing my own muscles and exposed nerves contracting and releasing dazed me for a few moments, until the feeling of hot blood dripping down my arm in time with my pounding heart shook me to awareness. A panicked rush of adrenaline kicked in. After 4 hours, the bleeding slowed but wouldn't stop. Pads make a decent wrap for limb wounds, much better than gauze in an emergency, just so you know. I spent the next 6 hours sitting on a gurney, convincing the nurses and attending psychologist that I wasn't suicidal and did not need to be placed under an involuntary 72-hour psychiatric hold. If I genuinely needed to, I would go, to be clear. I've been institutionalized on both a voluntary and an involuntary basis. I know how critical it is to be kept safe from the nagging desire to end yourself. This was unnecessary. I regretted tearing into myself the moment I realized I'd gone too deep. My concern was, for once, wholly on keeping myself safe. The last time I was institutionalized, my physical disabilities weren't diagnosed yet. I'd turned 18 less than a month before. Back then, fewer people gave my physical complaints a second thought. They thought I just wanted painkillers for the fuck of it. When, really, painkillers rarely touch the kinds of pain I experience. Anti-inflammatories and beta blockers work, while anything short of Percocet seldom takes the edge off. The pain mechanism in our brain body is a more complex physiological phenomena than most may realize, even looking past the fundamental difference between muscle and nerve pain. I've known that difference by feel since I was 16 years old. Physical pain is just as complex as emotional pain. In fact, the two operate with the same transmitters and receptors in the brain itself. This is why depression, anxiety, stress, all of these things can cause a physical pain response. The brain itself can't tell the difference. This enmeshment parallels that of pleasure and pain. Personally, to an extent where the damaged nerve in my left arm tends to act up whenever I use both hands to masturbate. I'll switch hands, of course, when it's too irritating, but I'd be lying if I said that cold throb didn't beckon me closer to coming undone. I am in some extent of physical pain every day, and have been longer than my memory spans. In no way am I saying or feeling self-pitying. This is simply a fact of my existence. If I wanted to milk this for pity, I easily could. The last thing I want is pity. I'd choose to endure more pain rather than seek pity. I have no use or need for pity, and to be honest, it tends to piss me off to feel like I'm being pitied. I'm telling you this in the hopes of showing a perspective I haven't found reflected in many other folks' experiences. Realistically, I know I'm not alone in how I feel, function, and find pleasure. On the chance that you may know someone with this also, whether you're aware of their hideous truths or not, I hope to inform and expand whatever you know of these things. Knowledge is power, and compassion is paramount. Using both at once with such intimate topics is vital. Now, regarding pain and sex,
I've got to admit that finding a trustworthy partner willing to go as far as I'd like is challenging at best. With my physical issues, partners are seldom comfortable with much beyond the mild to moderate scale. The one exception is knife play. Only an instance, though this was a bit of a misadventure. He wasn't into it, although neither of us knew that until we'd given blood and knives a try. Once in a while, if I'm in a steady headspace and have sterile supplies as well as a willing partner, knives and blood can be an option in the bedroom. Although, I have to say, I don't partake in either alone. It's too easy to indulge in old habits that way. Less, messy forms of pain are certainly a much more frequent indulgence. Biting is fucking required. A well-timed bite can make all the difference between edging on and on and on and on, or pushing me over the brink entirely. Bite hard at the right moment and oof, explosion. Fuck. I've distracted myself. Spanking, too, is something I prefer more often than not. Hands, whips, floggers, crops. Gimme, 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 please. My skin bruises and breaks easily. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and fragile skin go hand in hand, so being a bit extra careful is necessary. This tends to lead partners to vastly underestimate how much I can take and, more than that, how much I want. To be fair, with my weird little body, what I can take fluctuates with my day-to-day pain levels. Communication, of course, is the difference between mutual frustration and mutual pleasure. It's very easy to subluxate or fully dislocate my joints, too, which heeds more caution on a partner's behalf. I am not a low-maintenance partner, suffice to say. Between my physical limitations and trauma, there's a lot to go over for the sake of clarity and safety. More often than not, I don't bother trying unless I'm genuinely into someone. I don't really do casual. I have in the past, but the lack of an emotional connection just leaves me dissatisfied. Which doesn't necessarily exclude friends with benefits kind of situations, but legitimate friendship is simply required first. Until recently, I didn't know that I'm into pussy punishment, but fuck. Have I been enjoying solo play at the absolute least? Clamp on clit action in particular. I'm sure it seems paradoxical for me to enjoy pain as much as I do, especially when it comes to differentiating what constitutes self-harm and sexual gratification. Factor in a past of receiving abuse, and these waters become murkier. It takes a lot for me to trust someone else with my body. Hell, I'd endure another 3 years of celibacy rather than trust the wrong person. Still, an outlet is necessary, of course, hence why I'm here to begin with. Anonymity damn well appeals, not to mention that it's very different from face-to-face thought sharing. You're not burdened with the same exact social inhibitions as you are in person. Bearing pieces of your soul is easier when shouting into a void. Maybe it's just me, but I find it so much easier to write than speak. I'm not sure why organizing much of anything in my head is so fucking difficult. Unless I can see the words, I can't put them in the right order. I just zigzag around and bounce from fragment to fragment, trying to fit the pieces together into something cohesive. I'm very hesitant to record and upload this. Part of me wants to delete the first part and pretend it doesn't exist at all. What's stopping me is how horribly mental health overall is handled. I am fortunate to live in a state that funds mental health services as a priority rather than an option. Though the repugnant, quarter sentient at best, technical human, albeit not exactly a real person, actual pedophile and habitual sexual predator in the exact opposite vein of consensual, benign, kinky fun times. Yeah, that insult to the fact of humanity currently mismanaging my home country will continue to show no regard for the vulnerable. Rather, exploit any and everyone for the sake of material gain for he and his exclusively. The concept of mental health is wholly foreign to he and his enablers. I was raised to be compassionate with people who are struggling. My mother raised me, herself struggling with mental illness, with the understanding that people fuck up for reasons they cannot always control and may not even be aware of at all. This is one of the most valuable lessons she's imparted to me. Fuck. Much as I loathe the insult to Chester Cheeto in chief, I'd infinitely rather see him get the help he needs so terribly, rather than hanged, drawn, and quartered on live TV. There is seldom help for someone with NPD or ASPD. They have to want help. Of this, I am painfully aware. Harm reduction, however, is possible. Unlikely, perhaps, but not impossible. Everyone needs help with their mental health at some point. When you're chronically struggling, have been for a long time, and will always be affected by a malfunction in your brain, the you're not alones can seem disingenuous. Often, they say that you can talk to one of those who proclaim you're not alone so loudly and proudly. Often they have no fucking clue how to be helpful or supportive when you're in need and standing in front of them asking for help. And if you're in a darker than dark place, not only will your reality frighten them, you will too. People unaccustomed to seeing in the dark will require time and patience to adjust. They may never become comfortable skulking through the proverbial woods at night. When you have to guide someone through your endless night, your needs are pushed aside. This is fine in an actual survival situation in a forest at night, but not between people when one of them is struggling. And when in crisis, this is even more detrimental. I know I am not alone. Not in how I've struggled, not in how I've coped, not in how I've fucked up, been traumatized, or done my damnedest to heal. If you cannot identify with my experience, please know that I am grateful you have not endured any of this. In no way do I hold this against you. Please show me that courtesy in return, as I say the following. You can show support. However, please understand that connecting to someone who cannot empathize with your experience often feels empty and performative. Being honest about the parts of you you're ashamed and afraid of is vital to accepting and transforming them. The awful impulse to self-destruct is no different. It holds less power when you can stare it down, recognizing that its function is to remind you what hurts you and why. To recognize requires knowing firsthand. Wading into pitch dark water would frighten anyone the first few times. Stay on the shore if you're not willing to defy your fear outright. Mental illness is seldom pretty or comfortable. Now more than ever, truth regardless of ugliness is vital to ensuring the vulnerable are not left to their own devices. I feel entirely too much, too deeply. I'm too easily affected and too sensitive. Literally, my body is hypersensitive by design. Of course, this reflects in my brain. This cannot be beaten, trained, conditioned, or bled out of me. I've tried. It doesn't work. We can sanitize and soften the ugly truth of more severe and debilitating mental illness. But who does this help? It doesn't help the people who suffer with it. At all. This simply makes people who don't deal with this every day in their own heads comfortable. And when they're comfortable, they don't have to think about it. Which is all good and well for them. But they're not suffering firsthand because of their brain. They're suffering secondhand in response to somebody else sharing what is on their brain. What is in their brain, what physically makes up their fucking brain. I realize that this is very dark, very bleak, and far from everybody's choice of things to listen to. I don't know that I care if anybody listens. I mean, on one hand, someone bearing witness to this is something. I think what I'm more dreading and hoping for simultaneously is that someone will connect to this, that someone will identify with parts of this. Because I know they're out there. For a fact. I'd be a fucking moron to doubt that. I could have kept all of this to myself and would be entirely justified in doing so. But how is this going to make anybody else aware that people like me are here? Not. Ergo, this recording. I know for a fact that a lot of my doctor-patient kinks and other medical kinks come from repeatedly being gaslit by very fucking attractive doctors as a teenager. And you know, when you're a teenager and everything's already going fucking insane hormonally as is, it's a lot. I think part of my ADHD is a significant factor here. An intense experience is significantly easier to commit to memory. You don't even have to try. I mean, it can be good or bad. I mean, really bad memories stick out more in the mind, which probably has something to do with why trauma becomes so pretty fucking indelible in regard to the brain, like restructuring neural pathways entirely in response to trauma. It happens, and I have no doubt that this has happened to me as well. I do not function quite like quote-unquote normal people do. And this is not to say anything negative or in any way derogatory about quote-unquote normal people. It's just difficult to be seen in a world that values physical ability over intellect and substance. Not to mention, you know, silly shit like emotional intelligence. Why would anybody want that? Yeah, I hope that this didn't bring anybody down too much. It's genuinely not my intention. Misery doesn't fucking love company. It's a lie people tell themselves because they want to fucking commiserate and perpetuate their misery. I'm not telling this to spread misery, rather to say that I am here and I am different and I can't really help that. It's just me. And I know that the fact of my body's hypersensitivity has a hell of a lot to do with my sexual pleasure. I mean, I don't know about the sex lives of other people with EDS. I've honestly never met somebody else with EDS face to face, at least that I know of. But my body has always been absurdly sensitive to pleasure and pain. At some point, very early on, the two just merged. And now they're getting to a point where separating the two is, I don't know if it's possible. Genuinely, I don't fucking know. And this complicates every aspect of my life. Like, from what I do on a daily basis to what I want to do in the future. No part of my life is unaffected by this. No part of my body is unaffected by EDS. My fucking blood is thinner than it should be. My veins, nerves, and arteries, every fucking part of my body is very fucking fragile. And yet I like to torture it. In part because it's going to hurt anyway. I may as well get some sense of gratification out of the pain. Sometimes it's more along the lines of needing a more intense form of stimulation. And what is more intense than pain, really? Love, maybe. But that seems unlikely here, doesn't it? I also wanted to try to give another perspective on why somebody would be here. I mean, sure, there's the fact of masturbation simply being healthy. But what about disabled people too? We exist. Yeah. I don't know. I hope in some way this offered some perspective that maybe you hadn't considered before. I'm not saying any one side is more valid than the other. I am simply saying that this side is here and that this side exists. Brutal and visceral and violent though it may be, though it undoubtedly is, there is a reason. And It's not one that is easy to explain in a remotely short or concise manner.